Hi, it's Eric from The Morning After, Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 on Q105, the podcast, Q105.com. Lots to listen up on. If you just figured out, we're here. We do a lot of off-air podcasts as well, so we can dive deep into certain things and spend as much time as we'd like on things like the biggest movies in the world. We get a little nerdy with this one. Some friends, we've added a cast member to this nerd podcast. Let's go. We are back together again. It is another edition of an unnamed podcast from Lafayette, Virginia, of the show on Q105. We like to call it The Morning After. We do it Saturday mornings from 8 to 10. Every time there's a big sci-fi, comic book, geek release, we get together, we talk about it for like an hour or so, and we have some fun and you enjoy. We've got an extra person on the podcast this week, and I'll introduce everyone, as we go right now. My name's Eric, Eric Chase. We do The Morning After, Saturday mornings, back as usual. From Columbus, Vinny Chase. He is anxiously awaiting the Amadeus Cho incarnation of a Incredible Hulk movie. Right, Vinny?
Yeah, right.
Vinny's back. Also, another familiar voice in these podcasts from the arts community. We can't say where he works. Justin Camuso. Good morning. Good evening. Hi, Justin.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going well. It's going well. And you might have heard him on the show a couple of weeks ago. He is the proprietor and creator of Peep Game Comics. Also, 50% up this year for the second annual Glass City Black Comics Fest. Let me introduce Imani Latif. Hey, Imani.
Yo. Hello.
That was at the library a couple weeks ago, a cool event. We are here to talk about and celebrate the release of the Black Panther movie, the first Avenger of color other than green, which hit some historic numbers this weekend. I don't want to beat you over the head with statistics, but I'll give you a couple of these. It's going to wind up making about $192 million over 3 days. If they rope in President's Day for tomorrow and call it a 4-day weekend, it could be upwards of about $218 million. It is the fifth highest domestic opening of all time and the second biggest superhero movie in history in terms of its opening weekend, only behind the Avengers at 226. A couple other notes, largest February opening of all time, largest President's Day weekend opening of all time, and it gives Disney 8 of the top 10 domestic openings of all time. And this all thanks to the strength of Black Panther. Also, a notch in its belt, A-plus on CinemaScore. And to break down some of the demographics, which is something that we'll talk about, which powered this movie, aside from it being a fantastic movie, 37% of ticket buyers were African-American, 35% were white, 18% Hispanic, and most superhero movies score an African-American audience of about 15%. So race and demographics did play a big role, but also just a sensational movie. I'll be the wet blanket. I'll rock the vibranium and say, I only thought it was okay. So I'm based on all those numbers, I am clearly in the minority. So, Vinny, let me start with you. When did you go? Give me some early thoughts on it.
I ended up going to a late show Thursday night. I went and saw it at Columbus's only independent movie theater, and they usually have a great time there with these big releases. You know, a lot of the local comic shops will be there doing handouts. So I went there, a great vibe. In terms of the movie, you know what? I know me and you talked about it the other day, and I said I really liked it. You know, as the days have progressed and me thinking about it, I am itching towards loving it, actually. It was a great storyline, one of the best Marvel villains, period. You know, Killmonger is probably up there with Loki, probably even better, actually. I don't know. I'm still going back and forth on that one. And the movie, to me, had a big, it didn't almost feel like it was a James Bond vibe, you know, with the gadgets, the globe-trotting, you know, going on missions. Obviously, he didn't have the confidence with the ladies of a James Bond here, but, you know, I thought Chadwick Boseman, the whole cast was perfect, period. And I thought Shuri, the character that played his sister, stole the show as the comic relief. Loved her. Michael B. Jordan was fantastic as Killmonger. He's pretty much fantastic in almost everything he does anyway. So my only gripe with the movie, though, I thought the action scenes were a little lackluster.
Yeah, if there is one nitpick from critics, it's been that. I guess because it was so heavily CGI, and you're talking about a black costume. But Imani, you held an event on Thursday evening, correct, at Levis Commons?
Yeah, we did, for that Thursday, for the opening night. Well, no, it wasn't opening night, for that night before.
Essentially opening night.
Preview show, whatever they call it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Give me your thoughts on the movie.
Do. So, my thoughts were, of course, it's up there as one of my favorites.
Did it meet your expectations?
Yeah, I was surprised how emotionally engaged I was in the movie. It was emotional, like I guess, is this spoiler free? When certain things happened.
Go for it.
All the way.
Yeah.
Well, basically when T'Challa got sent over that cliff, you know what I mean?
Right.
That was like, there was like ton of emotional moments like that. You know what I mean? Like when he became, or like when he defended his title or whatever the first time, mm-hmm. you know, that whole fight scene, it's like, oh my, he might actually lose this thing.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
You know, even though I knew, it's like, it was like all these moments, like, I know he's not going to die or not,
right.
He's not going to lose, but.
You didn't get up and leave after you got thrown all over the waterfall?
I didn't leave.
That's the end of the movie.
I was sort of, or like, I was genuinely surprised when Killmonger killed Claw. Like, mm-hmm. I did not see that coming. There's all these things. It's like, wow, I did not see that coming. And then the way he used that as leverage to find his way into this whole kingdom and all these little subtle, you know, things in the movie, like, you know, the way their lips were tattooed to, you know, to get into Wakanda, or all these little moments, you know, constantly getting me more and more. I became more and more emotionally invested as the movie went on.
Justin, when'd you go see it? Your thoughts?
I saw it on Friday. I had to work on Thursday night, but
loser.
Was, yeah,
come on, you got to be a real fan. Get out there.
Hey, we saw it in the XD theater in Franklin Park, so we were there.
Wow.
It was awesome. I absolutely loved it. I was hoping it was going to meet my expectations. It's so tough with these that they, like, critics are seeing them like 3 weeks in advance, and it's always like, oh, the best Marvel movie ever. And it's like, can it be? And I was really hoping so, because I've been reading up a lot on Black Panther, and ever since, like, even slightly before Civil War was kind of when I first really started to delve into that character, and I fell in love with him like instantly. And so I was really interested to see how this was going to work. And Ryan Coogler, the director who did Creed, that is one of just my favorite movies ever. It's just emotionally powerful. It's just so, there's just so much to that movie that makes it more than just your average sports movie. And I was really hoping that he was going to bring that to the Marvel Universe, and he really did, because what he does so well is he not only can coordinate action really well and bring in all the right actors to play certain roles, but he does a really good job at taking the time to analyze characters and do little subtle and quiet moments where you can really learn a lot about everyone. And it all feels necessary. None of it feels like this is just a jokey waste of a scene just to get us to the next part.
Mm-hmm.
It's all cohesive. And I think what really struck me is how firm of a grasp on the story that Coogler wanted to tell. And you could tell right in the beginning, in the opening scene when they were in Oakland, that you knew exactly what kind of a movie he was doing, because he brought in the 90s riot era, and you knew that that was obviously going to be like a really big motivator to the entire movie. And so there was kind of that charge with it too. But then also when they cut to the kids on the basketball court as the Wakandan spaceship or the Wakandan jet like flew away, and it was that moment where we didn't know it was Killmonger, but we kind of we all kind of had an idea.
I think that was obvious.
Yeah, but just the fact of how he was like staring up at the sky and his mouth was like wide open and he was just like in awe, it's you knew that Coogler wasn't just making this for the comic book nerds. He wasn't making this for general audiences. He was making this for black kids.
Mm.
And it was such an incredibly powerful moment. And then they kind of echoed it again at the end when Black Panther showed up back at that same basketball court. And It was when...
Hold on. Vinny, what are you doing? And stop.
Sorry, I'm trying to cook dinner at the same time.
Right, like shucking, I hear, like, shucking potato.
Yeah.
But yeah, just to wrap it up, I was just going to say, like, all those thoughts were, like, going through my head as the movie was going, but it's always hard to, like, kind of keep that in your head while you're also trying to enjoy the movie. And then it was like, as soon as it cut to credits and that SZA and Kendrick Lamar song came on, I just kind of felt this like huge like like relief, and I just kind of like got like a chill down my back, and I was like, oh my god, this movie is amazing.
Right.
I'll be the wet blanket, sorry, and I don't think it was a bad movie by any means. I read too many reviews saying that it was such a masterpiece. And it put my expectations too high in the sky because it was a wonderful movie, and I love the hell out of the cast. Mm-hmm. My biggest gripe is that it's almost like the cast was too good, because I think that they are all better actors, especially the females are all better actors than Chadwick Boseman.
I think it worked though.
I think that I remember reading what you had wrote on Facebook, and immediately what I thought, without trying to sound like a total fan. Was that they did it intentionally, right? I mean, it's not like Chadwick Boseman can't, you know, turn it up.
Right.
You know what I mean? The dude played James Bond, for Christ's sake. It's like, James Brown. You know what I mean?
Correct.
So they intentionally, like, made him, like, a subtle character, and they turned up everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
intentionally.
He's not the wisecracking, like, Tony Stark.
Exactly. And also, the way... they made this movie to be totally accessible. Like, you know, like, I was really surprised at how often I heard, like, I don't know anything about Black Panther, but I'm going to see this movie.
Right.
So it's sort of like, I was happy that he made a movie where you did not have to see any other Marvel movie to actually appreciate this movie.
Absolutely.
And the way they did that was really to sell it to a lot of Black women. Like, there's only one Chadwick Boseman, but you know for a fact, like, all the main female characters are highly visible. They're right out front, and that's what really, like, really puts the movie over the top, because you could tell that this movie was made not just for little Black boys, but this was made for little Black girls.
Oh, yeah,
this was made for women. It was sort of like there was all these several niches involved, and not just like one specific niche.
Speak on this, because this is always hard for me to grasp, because I do see things often colorless and without any kind of bias. Like, I don't care if the cast would have been green. Those are all great actors. Mm-hmm. You mentioned they made a movie for women. It's like, hey, we got to get the guy. We got to get Sterling K. Brown from This Is Us, because women love that movie.
I didn't know he was in this.
I didn't know he was
in this.
But it was no surprise that he had a role where he had to cry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was actually no surprise. And so, like, if you were a fan of that show, when you saw him and then he started crying and all this emotional
just
stuff
came out of the person,
you like only imagine. You know what I mean? It's like, it sold it even more. Now you got people say, oh, I gotta go see this again for just that one scene. Like, there was tons of scenes like that, and I wasn't expecting it. And so, and I get what critics are saying. Like, it wasn't like this huge action-packed film.
No, it wasn't.
But, well, the thing that was interesting to me, and there's some things like, okay, as an African-American, there's some moments that I experienced personally where, like, we had that event at Levin's Commons, right? Mm-hmm. And the first people to show up, it was like 5:30. We started at 5:30. No one has shown up yet. We were worried. I was like, I don't know if anybody's going to come to this. And we were just, like, right in a little lobby out front. And so, like, the first group of people that came, well, I call them church mothers, these older, like, they were in their 70s, Black women. They don't know anything about Black Panther, Marvel, comic book, nothing. And they were the first people there to see this movie. And they were going to participate in that little event. And I could hear them in the movie when you get to some of these speeches and soliloquies where they're talking about race and social issues. I could hear them behind me saying, yes. You know, like, they were there for that. So they might not have been, like, my father saw the movie and said, oh, yeah, it's a great movie. And it's like, it was a little too much action for me, but it was good. And he said, and to top it all off, you were like this. He said, I think they'll make a comic book out of this. This is my dad.
What a great idea.
I think I can see a comic book coming out of this.
You know what? it makes sense to what Justin talked about, and Amani, your perspective from the black community. And Justin, what you said about how like the kids in the playground and little black kids can connect to that. I now that you bring it up, Amani, I think more like what do people who aren't Marvel fans who have never maybe had anything like this, like those church mothers, I would love to pick their brains for what they thought about this, because there has never been anything such an investment in something that is basically an entirely black cast, with the exception of
the
Martin Tyler.
Tolkien white boy. Yeah.
Martin Tyler, who is like the
Martin
best.
Freeman.
Martin Freeman.
I'm sorry. Who is like the best part of the Christopher Priest run, because he's hysterical.
He's great.
Yeah.
Total like white boy punching bag in that comic, and I love it.
Right.
Like nothing has been like this before. And look, Black Panther makes sense for people like us, and for little black kids, or black kids who like Michael B. Jordan or whatever. But there's never been anything in those women's lifetimes like this.
Yeah,
exactly. And so I didn't expect that. I expected to see a whole bunch of little kids come with their moms and dads. I didn't expect the whole older generation to come to see this movie, because they heard that this was supposed to be an important thing. I'm coming to support, you know, what's this about? This looks interesting. And I was amazed at how well Coogler was able to create a story that actually brought them in, didn't leave them out either. You know what I mean? You had elders, there were scenes where he was consulting with his elders. And that was a very important scene. Those were very important scenes. The whole scene where just before he was fighting, where all the different tribes were chiming in, and you had all these different chiefs or elders, you know, making these statements, like, it was important to see. So, like, everybody saw themselves in this film. And it's one of them things when we talk about diversity in comics in general, it's sort of like, it's all these subtle things like that that typically are missed when you just have, Bendis can just write this black character. He is fine.
Right.
When in fact, there's tons of little moments like that he's going to miss, because he's just not tied into the community like another author would be.
Right.
You know.
Absolutely.
Which is like amazing that, like, you know, you could tell like Marvel just basically said, you know, just handed it over. And kind of got out of the way. They handed over the money, and it's okay, whatever y'all say is the thing we should do, I guess we're going to have to trust you to do it.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
Vinny, from the perspective of a person of color being the Asian sensation, what are your thoughts on how important it was for a different community, and to see a movie that wasn't filled with a bunch of famous white dudes?
To kind of touch upon, you know, my experience at the theater, you know, that I was at, and I just remember getting out of the theater, and the theater I was at is actually right on Ohio State's campus, so it was, my audience is definitely skewed towards the younger crowd, you know, college students, you know, people my age, which I'm not going to say, but, you know, I remember getting out of the movie, and I'm just seeing these young, like, black teenagers just taking pictures in front of all the displays of Black Panther, you know, and as another, you know, as an Asian man, it made me jealous.
You want your Amadeus Cho, right?
No, I don't want Amadeus Cho. I am now, you know, hoping, you know, someday, you know, with the given success of Black Panther, you know, that I, you know, my kids, you know, that I don't know about, yeah, that
will
eventually. When those paternity tests come in, yeah, that, you know, my kids, or, you know, even sometimes, you know, in my lifetime, I'll see that representation on screen, you know, and just something that cool, you know, that kids can just look up to. So it made me very jealous.
Maybe one day we'll get a real interpretation, a more accurate interpretation of the Mandarin for you.
Right. And to kind of jump on your Amadeus Cho comments, you know, for those listening who don't know, Amadeus Cho is the, I want to say, current Incredible Hulk. He's a Korean who now has the powers of the Incredible Hulk. That's not what, you know, myself, you know, my little cousins, you know, everyone in my family, you know, they're Asian kids, I know. That's not what we want. We don't want, you know, white heroes, you know, played by Asian characters, or, you know, that. You know, we want Asian heroes. You know, played by Asians, you know, this movie, when, you know, is a black superhero, and it is very much, you know, embracing of that. You know, this isn't, you know, it's a superhero played by a black guy.
Yeah,
you know?
They couldn't
this
have,
movie
like,
is black and
switch
proud.
The characters out or anything like that.
What do you mean? Like, but when Michael B. Jordan played the Black Human Torch and the internet was, like, sideways about it?
Well, yeah, like, they couldn't have just, like, this couldn't have just been, like, a movie with all white people and they just decided to cast all black people instead. Like,
right.
The black identity was so important to this film.
Which is weird. Like, right. And this is like the silo in my head. And again, I do try to see things colorlessly, but like this to me, like, had to happen. And I'm glad that Ryan Coogler got the opportunity and a $200 million budget to do it, to deliver for the old ladies that mm-hmm. came out, because it is a great moment for them. But guess what? Black Panther is a very important part of the Avengers. And at some point he was going to need to be included. And we're just fortunate enough to have had a wonderful movie with incredible financial backing put behind it.
Yeah. Like, this could have just been a basic action Marvel movie that had no grounding in sort of, like, the racial issues, like, in our world today. But instead, they went full into it. And I think that was really important.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people dissected it in many different ways. And I was proud and happy to see the social commentary that Ryan Coogler included, because I believe our social and political views are quite parallel. I like the way that he included them. He stuck them out, like he made them stick out like sore thumbs, but they didn't seem like they were inappropriate. Yeah. They were very fitting.
I thought it all worked really well, especially that last line from Michael B. Jordan. Holy crap.
Oh, yeah.
With the Amistad kind of line, right? Like, I'd rather die than at the bottom of the sea. It was a great line.
Yeah. I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, that was a great scene, period. Yeah. I was coincidentally cutting onions in the theater. So.
Right?
I was like, you know, for all the awful names that people have given African-Americans and people of color in history we're all too familiar with, as a person who championed everything that's positive in the world, I wanted to get up and go, yeah, when I heard them call white people colonizers.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
When
Shuri said it.
It was amazing. I loved it. I'm like, yeah, that's who we are. And I'm like, wait, not me, but yes, white people, yeah. History's biggest problem. Let's step back and do some of the fun stuff, I guess. I think, Vinny, you brought it up. Shuri was awesome. And for anybody that wants to see a little bit more of her name is Letitia Wright. And I first saw her because she's in the final, and Dean, I know you watch, she was in the final episode of the last season, the latest season of Black Mirror. And she plays a really...
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Really twisty character. And it's a really great episode. If you've watched Black Mirror, it's basically like a summary of everything that's happened in the series. And she plays a super cool character. I looked her up because I wanted to know who she was. So I was very much looking forward to her her appearance in Black Panther. And Imani...
You know what's interesting about that is that if you read the comic books, right, it's like they tie everything... Like, Black Panther does all of it. T'Challa is the smartest person.
Right.
He creates all the technology. He wears the technology. He wears the suit. He's sort of like, he's the center of everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's like a Batman, like billionaire.
Right.
Also
which
has
is probably
the brains.
Which, why I was a little...
And like, I think it was a little off-putting. That's why I was saying, like, they did so many things to bring women into this film. Because, so like now... You know, in the movie, I'm getting the impression that this is going to be throughout the other franchises as well. It's sort of like he's like the fighter,
mm-hmm.
he's the king, but when it comes to the technology and the information and all of that stuff, he's now delegating all that those things to Shuri, or like the real like intense warrior. And so like, yeah, he's a warrior, but the person that'll actually kill somebody is going to be a Koye.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so like, it's all he has these, there's this like the supporting cast now that is not as prevalent in the books that are handling a lot of now the smartest person is Shuri now.
And maybe that's why I was a little surprised that his Chadwick Boseman's portrayal didn't blow me away.
Right. But that's the thing. It's like, yeah, it's like everybody has admitted to the fact that, oh, yeah, Shuri stole the show, or Koye was the person that stole the show. It was always, or like they're talking about, oh, now you got a faction of people that, like, I agree with Killmonger. Like, Team Killmonger. Yeah. That's the hashtag now.
Yeah.
And now there's a, now, like, you got a ton of women that are, like, there's a whole bunch of, like, racy, you know, Twitter mentions about M'Baku, like, you know, it's sort of like the dude M'Baku, right? It's sort of like, it's like all of these other characters are getting far more shine than Chadwick, but like the way they set up all the previews, you didn't know any about any of these until you saw the movie. That's why this movie was so good. So like all of a sudden you had this whole ensemble cast where everybody was on. Like the scenes when M'Baku, when he was like, you know, it's like, it's like, I'll feed you to my children.
We're vegans.
It was like, oh, we're vegans.
I know that guy, and I like that actor a lot. I saw him, I watched Person of Interest.
Oh, okay.
Crickets. He played a really badass criminal, like a real tough to beat guy in Person of Interest. So I saw him, and I was like, yeah, I know. I mean, it was like every major, successful, talented black actor or actress was in this movie. Back to Shuri, she was phenomenal. She was so much fun. She brought so much levity. I love when she's like, we got another white boy in town. And I was,
there's going to be a movie. I can already see there's going to be like a movie or some type of animated feature around just her.
You can see that. I heard people saying possibly rather than having like Riri taking over as Iron Man, having Shuri do it at some point.
Here's what
that could be possible.
Here's what I want.
That's a good idea.
Here's what I want in Infinity War. So I hope these scenes are shot already. And if I don't get it, I'm not going to walk out.
But you're not leaving.
I want her and Tony Stark in a scene together with a battle of tech and wits.
Yeah, I think that's
she
great.
Is his peer.
Yeah.
You know what? Here's the thing that kind of scared me. That's what I'm looking for in the Avengers thing. Remember when they were going to whatever that was, a Jabu or whatever, when they were escaping Wakanda.
Okay.
His mom and them.
Yeah.
And his mother said, you should take the herb. You should be the next Black Panther.
Right.
And now she was talking to, what's her name?
Lupita Nyong'o's character?
Yeah. No, not Okoye. He was talking to
Nakia.
Yeah.
Okay.
He said, you should be taking this on. Like, no. Like, I don't even think Nakia is a character even in the books. Like, they put this character, it's like, Lupita is like, you know, she has a name recognition. She's going to be in the next film. I'm afraid, like, somebody, one of those women are going to take the mantle.
I
would not be surprised if they become.
Yeah.
They're the next Black Panther.
Well, remember, they're out of the herb, but they're going to have to find the herb.
And that's the weird thing.
I'm
it's
sure
like,
they'll
stuff
find
like
it.
That. Stuff like that, it's like.
Is it gone forever?
And I haven't figured out which one of those things is actual stone. Like, supposedly the people think that Wakanda has a stone.
Let's
but
talk about the nerdy stuff of this. People are wondering. I guess there was speculation. There's one more Infinity Stone that Thanos is coming to Earth for, and I believe
the
Soul Stone was somewhere in Wakanda. And I just read stuff from Ryan Coogler saying he didn't include any Infinity Stone stuff in this movie because he figured the vibranium was enough for people to figure out. And I guess with that must have been the biggest meteor to ever hit Earth. Like, that thing just went down. Like, the tunnels, those scenes were so cool.
Yeah,
The subway that they had running through there to take away the vibranium and all that stuff. She built a hell of a little city down there.
Yeah.
Maybe the Soul Stone is buried at the bottom of that meteor crater or something.
We'll find out the hard way.
Somebody that I follow was speculating that they thought the vibranium was a stone. And
I don't think that's going to be it.
And then I was thinking, like, he was like, okay, here's my crazy theory. Was that the herb was somehow the stone, and they're going to take it and, like, kill T'Challa. And
it was a flower, though.
Yeah.
But he is, like, he's the only living embodiment of it. There's no other.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Kind of like how Vision like, is in his head.
Right.
Yeah.
And, like, and so he's physically is carrying this thing around. Like, if he dies or something, that's the end of it.
He's not going anywhere.
No. I say synthesize it and turn it into some type of super serum.
Vinny, any theories leaving Black Panther?
You know, with the Soul Stone, I was thinking, I mean, obviously you watch the previews for the new Avengers movie and a lot of action appears to take place on Wakanda.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe like a Soul Stone is buried and that's what the herbs are growing from.
Yeah,
because, you know, every time either, you know, T'Challa or Killmonger, when they took the herb, they went to a plane where they could see their, you know, their fathers and their ancestors. So that's what I was kind of thinking right there.
Justin, any theories leaving the movie? We aren't might go towards Infinity War with Thanos on his way with his Black Order.
I have no
idea.
We do know that, like, obviously from just the few little teaser trailers we've gotten for Infinity War, part of it does take place in Wakanda. I mean, they show them running through the fields, and Okoye is there with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it does appear that it's gonna there's gonna be some sort of battle there. So I assume that there has to be a stone there somewhere, maybe deep in the mountain, and they have to defend it because.
Right.
I mean, maybe that stone was on that meteor that slammed into to the big. You know what? Everybody's pretty familiar with the comics, right? With the Black Panther stuff. I'm surprised they didn't say the Big Mound, which they refer to often in the comics.
Right.
I'm surprised they didn't mention that in the movie at all.
They did. I thought they did. I thought
I don't think they said Claw said it.
I thought he said they have this giant mountain where everything's at.
Yeah, but they said like the mound or the big mound, like mountain was a little different.
They don't refer to it as a sacred place,
right?
In the movie, but they do. I guess they do. They talk about the mineral, but not where it's from.
Right.
They don't show it actually being mined or anything like that.
Right.
They say, oh, yes, it's over there. You know, it's, they don't do anything like that in the film. But that's the thing. That's like there's a ton of stuff like that. They just sort of like conveniently left out of the film. So you don't even have to, you know, think about it.
Yeah.
You know, it just made the movie that much more accessible.
Imani, you mentioned Killmonger throwing Black Panther T'Challa over the waterfall, which I believe is a famous comic scene. I didn't read those comics, but it was in one of the sites that I went to, and said they grabbed that from the comics. What was your biggest oh shit moment from the movie? Was it that one?
What? There were so many.
It could be anything. It could be a tech thing. It could be a joke.
It was all. That's the thing about the movie. There was so many of those little moments. Like, I don't know why I was so obsessed. For a while, I was obsessed with the fact that Nakia was driving with no shoes on. And they kept going back to the fact that she was barefoot. It's like they kept showing her foot. And it was like, wow, right. She ain't got no shoes. And I don't know why it became like a thing. Like for me, it's like, oh, wow. It's like she's barefooted. But or like in the lab. And yeah, he's right. Like that. A lot of the scenes were like James Bond, where he's walking through the lab, like, "Oh yes, this is the new technology," and like the sneakers bit. That was funny.
What are those?
Right.
I laughed at that. I was like, "Well, this is weird."
Did everybody get that?
Yeah.
The what are those?
Because that's a Vine thing.
Yeah.
I was confused about that. I'm like, all right, they're cut off from the rest of the world, but they understand these.
Oh, they're not cut off from. They cut the world off from them. They are not cut off from the world.
And that's the thing. Those are issues that I've always had with the book or with the whole Black Panther mythos in general. Like, it's sort of like, how is it that, okay, Wakanda's technologically advanced, but then, like, all these little tribes that look like they're still living in huts. What's that about? It's like, are they a part of all of this? Do they get access to all the same advances? Why isn't M'Baku out here in the middle of, you know, on a mountain with no shirt on?
One big city, and then it's like the surrounding areas that keep the normal day-to-day functions going.
Right, and it's sort of like I've always wondered, okay, and it's like there's always political infighting and what kind of, when you think about the books, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the, so like if I had any hang-ups with the movie, those are just the hang-ups I've always carried with me from the books in general.
Right.
So like with the Black Panther as a character all the time. So it's like...
Vinny, what was your biggest oh shit moment?
I really... the flashbacks to the Oakland, those really hit me a lot on an emotional level here. So I was not expecting that, you know, kind of from this kind of movie. So, I mean, that was my biggest oh shit moment.
How about how sad that was that Sterling K. Brown's character lives in the apartment, like in this afterlife for the rest of his life, and all the rest of the royal family like lives in this plane together, and he's stuck there.
He did do Wakanda dirty.
I know, oh, but it's God. So sad.
I never thought about it like that. It's like I did when I saw that scene. It's like, wow, he's back at the apartment. And like, you don't even get the grand feel with the tree and the panthers. He don't get none of that. He got to go back to Oakland.
Yeah.
I got a question. Maybe,
Oakland's not that bad.
I know, right?
Maybe you guys can explain it to me. In the final scene, when T'Challa decides to like settle down in that Oakland neighborhood with the family and everything, and Nakia is going to open up all these social outreach places. He's like, I bought that building, and that building,
right,
and that
right.
building. And the kid kept looking over at him. He's like, that yours? I thought there was going to be something a little more deeper there emotionally. Like, he'd be like, well, listen, kid, you might have heard of me or the Avengers, and I'm with them, and I've got this thing, and we're going to kick some ass. Like, I thought there might be a little bit more there.
Yeah, they did the cheesy, like, who are you? And he, like, looks at the camera, and then it just, like, cuts
across
the face.
Right.
And then
Some dialogue with Everett Ross. Ross covered up, looks like, some of the events of Civil War.
Yeah.
Because remember that part where you met him in the casino? He said, yeah, you know, there's a Chang with a bulletproof suit, you know, that no one knows about. Thank you. You're welcome, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think the kids, I don't think the public, general public knew about that.
Well, but he can go like, you know, all those famous white people, the Avengers. Well, I'm with them, and you might have heard of the Black Panther movie that's coming out now, and that's my ship. I don't know. This was this deeply detailed, emotional, well thought out movie, and then the kid's like, that yours? Yup. Peace out. I just expected a little bit more there, but whatever. Did anybody? I've always wanted to talk about that. I think about this because I Google Easter eggs for like Black Panther or Thor 2 or whatever it is. Mm. What, Justin? What to you is an Easter egg?
An Easter egg, I feel like, could just be anything that is either setting up something that's to come or possibly just like a little note that could be like a hint to the comic book fans. And then sometimes it's a throwaway Easter egg, and sometimes it's like there for a reason. Like, I thought it was really interesting that, and wait, did we all stay for the very, very last credit scene?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, we were not talking with the amateurs.
Who are you asking there?
People were still leaving in our theater, and I was like, how do we not know? Like, how do we not know yet? Right. And, when they called Bucky the White Wolf, I was like, oh,
that's
not who it's supposed to be. But if that's where they're going, I'm okay with this.
And they've done that several times. The White Wolf is the Black Panther's, like, white boyfriend.
Adopted brother, not boyfriend.
Yeah, he's like the head of the secret police, Wakanda's police.
But I think that's really right, interesting. It's really interesting to me because I've had the theory going forever that I'm fairly certain that Cap is not going to make it out of the next one of the Infinity War movies. And so I've always been like, well, are they going to have Bucky be Captain America? Or are they going to have Falcon be Captain America? Are they not going to do it at all? But if they're having Bucky be a White Wolf, then that just clears the mantle for possibly Falcon taking over.
Did Shuri say call him the White Wolf?
Yeah.
Oh,
or no, the kids were calling him that.
Oh.
They were like chanting.
I totally missed that.
They were like chanting White Wolf.
Yeah.
That is really, really cool. So that means he will be over the whole espionage.
That's why I think
the
they
war
were
dogs.
If they decide to go that route.
And that's the thing, is they cannot do anything with it.
You know what it is? Like, you know what that is?
But they wouldn't have dropped it in there.
Exactly.
To your point of, like, Chris Evans is, I guess, likely done, if for no other reason, that, like, they're taking the next phase into the cosmic realm, which will leave aside maybe Captain America. That's called contract negotiations.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So, like, Sebastian Stan, you don't want to do that role? Well, guess what? Anthony Mackie's sitting there.
Also, you can afford Sebastian Stan longer than you can for Chris Evans right now.
They're paying these guys all nothing. Nothing. Imani, what's an Easter egg? Like, how do you define an Easter egg? Like, does everybody have to get it, or is it just for people like us? Because to me, an Easter egg is just for like people like us. It's like the, oh, damn, did you see that? And everybody else is like, see what?
Well, see, that's the thing. This is one of those movies for the first time. It was sort of like I wasn't thinking about anything Marvel related.
Okay.
I was just there for the Black Panther experience.
Right.
So, yeah, like, of course, I totally missed the White Wolf thing. You know what I mean?
You got to go see it again. Are you going to, right?
Oh, I definitely got to go see it again. Because I knew I probably was missing a whole bunch of stuff like that. But, so, that's the weird thing. This particular movie, I wasn't looking for any Easter eggs because I didn't care.
Right.
You know what I mean? I didn't care about any Easter eggs or how it ties into the Infinity or War or anything like that, because I was just here for, you know, the Black Panther stuff.
Which I think it was good that they did that.
Vinny, how do you define an Easter egg?
I treat them as like maybe nods to like fans of, you know, either the source material or just the Marvel films or any films in general.
Right.
So that's how I treat them.
Okay.
I did catch the White Wolf one, like, well, not immediately, but the next day when I was reading, I was like, oh, yeah, forgot about that. Other than that, I didn't really catch many either, just because I was just so enthralled with it. I never look for them anyway when I'm watching movies the first time.
Really?
It's usually the second or third viewing that I'm catching all that stuff.
I'm always looking for them, and then I go, like, fact-check myself after the case. Mm-hmm. I go home, and I Google Easter eggs for Black Panther. That one article that I read, it said, if you blink and missed this during Black Panther, and one of the things on the list was the Stan Lee cameo. I'm like, come on. But you know what? Right. For some people, like, if you're
like, you know what, like the Stan Lee cameo in this movie was actually one of the like worst that I've seen,
because he just showed up at the
yeah, like,
the
took
casino.
Some chips. It wasn't even like, it was like a real cameo. It was barely a cameo.
He
it
might be
like,
dead.
It, yeah,
and I it's think like they had hologram bunch,
right? Just in case.
I'm pretty sure they had James Gunn shoot like 4 or 5 just so they have them,
just in case.
Yeah.
Cause yeah, that was like the most boring Stanley cameo that I've ever, you know.
I want to go back. We brought this up at the beginning of the discussion. Like, it's a real low bar for Marvel to cross with good villains, and maybe that's intentional, just to make Thanos like the baddest thing that we've ever seen. I don't know. I think it's just been poorly done. I watched Iron Man last night, and
Jeff Bridges,
the initial, and like that villain is actually not that bad, all things considered, in the Marvel world.
Yeah, he's like, but related to him, he's like a father figure to him,
right?
But
it's not clunky, and like Tom Hiddleston is the force behind everyone's Loki love. He's the internet's boyfriend. He's my boyfriend. He's great. But the Killmonger, like, it was so grounded. Like,
right.
I don't think any, like, I completely agree with the way he felt doing everything he did mm-hmm. in that movie. And all he had to do was not be a dick in that throne room. If he could have been like, yeah, we're kind of related, and I'd like to fight him, and maybe you guys wouldn't consider me.
No one would have like been as
right.
Yeah,
he was in there wagging his dick like, yo, this is my spot.
Yeah.
That's the thing is, like, I was telling him, explaining to my wife, it's like how they wrote him was sort of like, he was like a huge caricature of American culture, right? It was sort of like when he came into the film, it was sort
Sup,
of like
auntie.
It was like, yeah, all these corny lines, you know, from, you know, it's like he's supposed to be an American dude.
I'm just chilling.
It's like, oh, I'm just chilling in the throne
right.
room. It's like, oh, come on, really? And sort of like, it's like, and so when you think about it, yeah, when I can imagine if someone actually would write him into the book like him,
mm-hmm.
you know, those same sentiments. Like, I can imagine if Christopher Priest wrote this character, his approach would have been far more subtle,
mm-hmm.
and you could have like carried it over several more books. You know what I mean? The way they sped through him, his character, so like he was sort of like, it was all this war of attrition. So like he immediately came in, started killing all the bunch of people. He's gonna send out weapons and all mm-hmm. this kind of stuff. Had he had done everything a lot slower, it would have been even scarier. It would have been like, had he had come in and said, okay, I'm just gonna win these people's trust. You know,
dropping a dead body at somebody's doorstep is
right. It was like, it was no subtlety, and that's the thing. It was like, there was always these extreme characters. So like, it was like Black Panther, his character was extremely quiet. You had Killmonger, he was extremely noisy and obnoxious. You had, you know, Okoye, she was extremely violent. She was like spearing everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, you had Shuri, she was joking around, and like it was like this ceremonial thing, and all of a sudden it's like, can we go home now?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, you had all these extreme characters, but I know for a fact, like when I think about Killmonger, I said, man, if he had like, had he made his way in, had he had just like took his time and really was sort of like,
win the crowd,
win the people over, it's sort of like he would have been far more dangerous. But I think I would consider this character, this is the Marvel's version of Heath Ledger, Joker.
Oh, the Joker.
I think, yeah,
definitely. Like, it's sort of like he was like, it was about chaos. He like, you know, that he's like, was really into his character and was really pushing. It was like a, it wasn't just, he wasn't crazy or doing things just for the sake of doing it. Mm-hmm. There was a logic and story behind it. I think it was definitely,
as a villain, you can make some parallels. Let me make
another comparison. Let me throw this by you. Like, as I've gotten older and as I've watched movies like a second and third time, I go, oh, I get that bad guy's perspective. I know why he did that. Like, when I watch A Few Good Men now, I'm like, I know why he had to defend that base. I'll use Bane. And I don't know, you've seen Dark Knight Rises, of course, right? And I don't know, like, that was during the Occupy Wall Street time. And
right.
The more and more I watch that movie, I'm like, you know what? If Bane didn't do what he did and he just would have went about this a little bit more legally, he would have won the middle class over instead of by being a terrorist because they attack the one percenters. And now when I watch the movie, I go, I agree with why he's doing it. I don't agree what he's doing. But back to my point, the Killmonger character was perfect because had any of us had our fathers killed like that and been left as an orphan, fuck yeah, I'd be mad too. I'd be fucking pissed. And I'm glad that they did the mirror of that with T'Challa's doubt within his father going, Dad, you fucked up. You fucked up.
Yeah. Right. And I thought so it was so strange that, like, I almost wish in a weird way this would never happen, but I almost wish that they hadn't told us that, like, Michael B. Jordan was, like, in this movie, because that would have been crazy, because, like, when he pops up, like, because we all know who he is, and we, you know, we go, we read online, like, we know he's playing Killmonger, we know he's going to be the bad guy, but like you said, like, that group of women who came to this movie, they might not know who he is.
They don't have the internet anymore.
And so, like, for them to be like, oh, who's this, like, weird American guy, like, making out in the with his girlfriend in the back of the car, and, like, just randomly shoots who you think is the main guy.
Right.
Like, that would be, like, kind of more of a twist, but, like, we obviously know, because we know that he's going to be... I still didn't expect him to kill Claw, but, like, we knew that he was going to take, like, over, and...
With the previews, I even going into the movie, I still assumed that Killmonger was sort of like a...
Secondary villain.
Because
we read the comics.
It's always been a Claw.
Claw is Panther's Joker.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's like, I did not, and the way they set it up, I did not see that coming at all. So when, like, when he kills Claw, and then he's dragging the body to the one person that's, you know, who's dying to have it, you know what I mean? I was like, oh, this changes everything.
And you knew that moment, you're like, oh my gosh, he knows exactly what he's doing.
He is not playing second fiddle to nobody.
Which is why, like, this is, like, even if Killmonger is not your favorite villain in the Marvel Universe for whatever reason, it is the most grounded and reasonable.
Yeah.
Like, what was
Daniel Kaluuya?
What was his character's name again?
I don't remember what his name
was. M'Baki?
I don't remember.
But I don't remember. Michael B. Jordan, for Killmonger to show up to his doorstep.
On purpose.
Right. Like, on purpose. Like, the one guy who was like, maybe I can be swayed, and drop that body right there. I'm like, oh, it is on now.
Right, exactly.
T'Challa has a real challenge.
Yep. Yeah. And that's what was so great, is that even smaller characters like Daniel Kaluuya's character, everyone had, like, some sort of slight motivation. They had, they took seconds to, like, make sure you knew what that character's motivation was. Like, you knew he was pissed at Claw, and you knew that he had very slight intentions earlier on in the movie where he was like, shouldn't we, like, kind of go out into the world? Mm-hmm. And him and T'Challa had that conversation on the farm, and T'Challa was like, nah. And he's like, yeah, you're right.
Right.
And then, like, Killmonger shows up and does that. But then even, like, Okoye, who you're just like, yeah, she's, like, here as, like, a secondary character. But then there's the scene when Nakia tries to get her to leave with her, and she's like, I can't. Like,
I can't,
my
right.
allegiance is literally to this throne. It doesn't matter who's on it.
Right.
Right.
And even though it's killing her on the inside
right.
with everything that happened, you can still, like, see it, that she hates it. But every character has that little bit of a moment.
Dude.
That's, like, what makes it so great.
Can you imagine if they decided, like, okay, we weren't going to... What if they didn't come out? This didn't come out as a movie, but, like, we're gonna do this as a series, like on Game of Thrones. Killmonger would have been a far
episode
more
episode 7. Oh my god, you have to see episode
right,
7.
Right, exactly.
All the shit goes
down. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's moments, sort of like, of course, this was like, I like the fact that they made a movie and made it such a cultural thing.
It was a moment.
Yeah,
it was
extremely powerful moment. But I think, like, a lot of the things that you were looking for from it, it's like, probably would have been far better if it was like a Netflix show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They could have drug out, you know what I'm saying? The things that they were setting up in this movie, those are the things that I would have loved to have seen in Luke Cage, which I didn't see and I hated. You know what I mean? I did not like how they set up those storylines or the backstories in that show at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, the little bit they did in this 2-hour film, it's like they did just enough, so I can only imagine had this same team had been able to, you know, lay out the story for like a Luke Cage or something like that, it would have been far more entertaining. But it's sort of like
I read a story, and Justin, maybe you saw it, and Vinny, maybe you saw it. It was on the Ringer. They wrote a lot of Black Panther stuff all week, as they usually do with movie moments and pop culture moments. And there was one story about how Ryan Coogler is like a zenith level, an apex level filmmaker, because nobody put the detail into Creed like he did in some diner scene with the cheesesteak and Jill Scott. I'm like, please, I'm from Philadelphia. Anybody who's done a Philadelphia movie includes cheesesteaks, Jill Scott, and The Roots. Musically speaking, anyway. And I thought about that article when I was watching the movie, and I'm like, no, the stuff that you guys have talked about, like this inner conflict within these characters, is detail more than putting cheesesteaks in a Philly movie.
I think they were referring more to the conversation that the two of them have while they're having cheesesteaks.
No, they definitely wrote about nobody puts cheesesteaks in a Philly movie like Ryan Coogler. I'm like, shut the hell up.
Michael B. Jordan literally raps about cheesesteaks in the movie Creed. There's a moment where he raps about cheesesteaks. It's really odd.
I still think his motive, where he was able to draw the rage, like the Heath Ledger type of like darkness he went to for the Joker. Michael B. Jordan thought, I was so sick of getting offed in The Wire. I will tell you where the fuck Wallace is. He honed all that internet rage for the Human Torch bullshit and focused it on being a badass Killmonger. Yeah. Amani, final thoughts as we wrap up. What do you got going on with Peep Game?
Well, I've been pushing. What has been interesting is that, you know, they have been skyrocketing, but yeah, sales have been
up. Right,
have been up.
Good
this weekend.
Good. The website.
PeepGameComicsWithAX.com.
Cool. Justin, final thoughts?
Well, I could jump back on the movie real quick just because I just wanted to say like my two favorite parts because I just felt like I didn't really get to. I thought the whole casino sequence, specifically when all the shit goes down and it's like almost a continuous one-take shot, which he had done in Creed too. I love that more people are trying to do that. And I mean, there's obviously some editing happening where, you know, it looks like it's one shot, but it's not really. But they did a really damn good job with that. And also, Okoye gets to kick some major butt in that scene. But then also, I don't know if they shot it with, like, an IMAX camera or if it was different. But there was the part when the when Killmonger burns all the plants. And I felt like my screen got wider. And I don't know if we were – because I know sometimes when you see, like, an IMAX movie – the frames can jump sizes from like the IMAX scene to
that's super nerdy.
Yeah.
What's your degree at BG yet?
Film production. But it almost felt like the screen got bigger during that sequence, and then it kind of transitioned into the whole throne room flipping around when it was upside down, because it was like obviously a metaphor for like he's turned the whole kingdom upside down.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But it was just so beautiful and it looked so amazing.
That's
a
Batman they did that Batman too, don't they?
With IMAX?
Turn the screen upside down?
Yes, IMAX. And yes, with the.
What, you is that a Christopher Nolan trick? Is that what we're talking about?
I don't know if it's a trick. I just know, like, I've seen that in the Batman film. Like, when they turn the whole thing, the whole scene goes upside down.
It's not an original thing, but it looks really great.
I have to go back and see it again so I can enjoy. I have actually enjoyed our conversation more than I enjoyed the movie, but again, my expectations were screwed up. Vinny, final thoughts.
You know, I was reading an interview with Kevin Feige, the Marvel head. About the movie, and they were talking to him about how Wesley Snipes tried doing Black Panther in the early 90s, but I just never got it off the ground.
Yeah,
and they asked him what he thought. And they asked
him
what he thought.
Don't you speak ill of Blade?
Blade's awesome. No Blade slander here. But no, anyway, so they asked him, you know, how he felt about, you know, Wesley Snipes' efforts, you know, of Marvel trying to do that. And he said, "I'm glad we didn't do it in 1992. Because Ryan Coogler was still a kid."
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that speaks like volumes of, you know, how much faith they had in Ryan Coogler. And he did a fantastic job. You know, I can't wait to see his next film, period. You know, he's a great filmmaker. And I was going back to Michael B. Jordan. I was worried when I saw him on the cast as the villain.
Mm-hmm.
I was worried he would pull it off, you know, because he's such a likable person. He was great in Creed. Wallace of the Wire, obviously, you know. It was a very sad moment when he got killed on there.
Where's Wallace?
I didn't watch Friday Night Lights, though. But I was definitely not disappointed. Slightly disappointed in the action sequences, but overall, loved it. Can't wait to see it again.
What's the next time we do this? What's up next? Is Deadpool next, or is there something before that?
I think we got Deadpool.
No, Avengers is May 4th.
Yeah, but Deadpool is...
May 18th.
Oh. Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. They rearranged. That's right.
There we go. Imani Latif, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, yeah.
Justin Camuso, thank you.
Thank you.
Vinny, live from Columbus. Thanks, buddy.
No problem.
All right. We'll do it again soon. I'm hanging up on you now, buddy. Thank you for listening to another off-air exclusive podcast of The Morning After on Q1055.com.